Yeah, I'm talking now to Vladimir Arsenijevic in Belgrade, writer, author of novels like The Cloaca Maxima, Ishmael, the drawings by comic artist Alexander Sokrav, with some punk rock experiences in his biography, also playing in the bands Urbana Guerilla and Berliner Straße. But from 1985 on, migrated to London, and now he's living in Belgrade. And in Belgrade, there was very interesting literature festival 1 week ago. Krokodil Festival just took place in Belgrade 1 week ago. And can you explain the idea behind it?
Sure, why not? This was the 11th edition of Krokodil Festival, and it's annual, so we have been going on for 11 years now, which is quite a tradition already. We started off in 2009 as a regional affair, actually, by region meaning the area of former Yugoslavia, particularly the central part, where the mutual, formerly called Serbo-Croatian language, is spoken. Officially now we have four separate languages, but the main point behind them is that we never intertranslate, so they're mutually understandable, and we see them as the one language. And we wanted to connect the main actors in the literature of that language, so we made a platform of this really lively, dynamic, contemporary, modern literary festival in Belgrade. And it feedbacked really well with the audiences, so it ended up being kind of like a cultural phenomenon, in a sense that we would have more than 1,000 people per an evening at our events. And everybody in Europe knows that when you talk about literary events, anything above 50 people in the audience is considered really good visit. So we kind of multiplied that number, the number in a big way. And this year was crucial for us, because after the first decade, we decided to significantly internationalize the festival, and we had a really successful edition as well.
Mm-hmm. In 1994, you published your first novel, U pod Balubliu, in German translation, Cloaca Maxima, that tries to explain the reaction of a young, somehow alternative family and their relatives and friends in Belgrade towards the outbreak of violence around Vukovar and the starting war between Yugoslavia. And how do you remember that time personally?
Yes, this was the era. Well, the book, which is actually the English translation, is In the Hold, as in the hold of the ship, under the deck, is the actual translation. There was a book with a similar title before in Germany, so they decided to use the title Cloaca Maxima, which was actually for me the title and still is of the whole tetralogy that the book In the Hold, the first book, is a part of the series. And it's set in the period of 3 months between October and December of 1991. And this was the time when the breakup of Yugoslavia, this violent breakup of Yugoslavia, had started through this really terrible war that started in Croatia, particularly in Slavonia region around Vukovar, and also in Dubrovnik on the southern Dalmatian coast. And for the young people in Serbia, that particularly males, that meant a period of heightened military draft. And people were virtually taken by the military police and brought taken to the front as well, and they would probably be killed or injured or something, and then returned back home. So there was a big commotion, a big and very depressive dynamic around Belgrade in that time, where young people were trying to hide from the military police, and there was also a part of the society which was very supportive of the war. So there are these now for us very shameful images where the tanks are leaving Belgrade and heading towards western parts of the country, towards Slavonia, and you can see people in New Belgrade with flowers, throwing them onto the tanks and kind of cheering them. But this is not actually the atmosphere that I remember. Everybody was extremely worried. People found it very hard to get to terms of what was going on. We were in disbelief, and lots of people couldn't even believe that we could end up having a massive war within the country. Throughout the period of socialist Yugoslavia, we were prepared as a society for this imaginary foreign enemy that never really came, but then we had to find it among ourselves, and that was a big blow. Plus, another big blow was the fact that the majority of the people living in Yugoslavia at the time were actually experiencing the wars through the media, through these TV images. And these images were actually these very same images that you have experienced this war in Germany or in Canada or in Australia or anywhere else globally. So there was this also feeling of disassociation from it. And yet, if you were in Belgrade, some of these things were happening at a distance of, you know, less than 100 kilometers. And you could so easily become a part of it and then end up, you know, kind of being killed. So there was this really bipolar feeling of belonging to this whole horrific reality and then not belonging to it as well. So this is the situation in which the young people have found themselves throughout the 1970s and 1980s. I mean, young culture, youth culture in Yugoslavia was really blooming. And we just didn't see it coming. We thought that we were living in the modern world and that our society would be able to overcome these strifes, but then it ended up in a different way. And so this was the atmosphere in which also the protagonists of the novel have found themselves.
Then 1989 maybe was a year where societies in the socialist countries also changed a lot. There were also many hopes at that time, I think, but then in Yugoslavia.
Of course, of course. Yes, I lived in London from 1985, when the reality in Yugoslavia seemed kind of depressing, but more or less normal, until 1989, when I returned actually to Yugoslavia from London and made probably my biggest mistake in my life. But also being that mistakes are so complex, and, you know, I can think about it in many different ways now. But yes, there were these global processes, and obviously, you know, I mean, Berlin Wall fell, and, you know, there was this whole domino effect of the collapse of these communist regimes throughout the Eastern Europe. But Yugoslavia had this very complex attitude and relationship towards the Eastern European countries. We did not feel that we belonged to the group. We were not behind the Iron Curtain. And there was a massive sense of pride in that negative sense of the word among the Yugoslavs towards the Eastern Germans or Poles or Czechoslovakians, that we somehow felt superior due to the fact that we were not really West, but we were not the East either. We were like this thing in between that has traces of both. So in a sense, we were like a poor cousin of the Western countries, but definitely much better off than any of the Eastern countries. Plus, we had passports. And then we had foreign tourists as well, and people were coming to the Adriatic Sea and sort of enjoying the sun and stuff. And due to the fact that we ended up with our relationship with the Soviet Union already in 1948, the contemporary culture was developing in a way that it was developing in the rest of the Western world. So we had rock and roll bands and we had cool genre movies, and, you know, we could see, I mean, Star Wars in the cinemas as it was playing in the rest of the world and things like that. So there was this feeling of belonging to the modern world among the Yugoslav, but nevertheless, the global processes of the collapse of communism vibrated really, really strong here as well. And I remember as I was returning from London to Belgrade, the situation was dire and it was really depressing. But I somehow believed that, you know, due to the fact that the world is changing, that we have to be a part of this change as well, that we couldn't be a side of it or going in the opposite direction to it. But this is exactly what we did. So if you place a lot of faith in the human nature, I mean, my experience is don't.
Okay, something to be learned.
Yeah.
Then in 1997, you continued the trilogy Cloaca Maxima with another novel, Angela, and 2018, a third novel, Kakranici, to complete the, or maybe not to complete the Cloaca Maxima book series. Can you explain shortly the development of the personalities in the novel in the later?
Yes, of course. It's a tetralogy, actually. So it was planned as the four book series called Cloaca Maxima and subtitled the soap opera. Probably nowadays I would subtitle it the reality program or something like that. And the structure and the idea remained the same from the beginning when I conceived it. And my plan was and still is to show the characters who are awaiting a baby and are just a normal couple reaching their 30s, young people in Belgrade, living this absolutely non-specific, normal urban life of the end of the 20th century and the beginning of the 21st century that you don't even have to specify geographically. I mean, we all, you know, kind of nowadays use social networks and are on the internet all the time and then travel with cheap flight and things like that. So the geography there almost doesn't play a role at all. And then these things happen on a local level that completely ruin this notion of being able and privileged to live this kind of life. You don't. And these people have to find new ground in these changed circumstances that literally exploded to their faces. With a set of number of tragedies that happen at the beginning of the war where the very close and very, very dear people die as a result of the wars as well. So the first three books that you have mentioned, In the Hold, Angela, and Close to the Frontier, or something like that, Kagranici, actually covered the period of 1 year, of 12 months, from October 1991 until October 1992. And the fourth book, which is really the epilogue of sorts, is set in the nowadays, in the time that we live now. And it's actually signifies the moment in time from where the narrator is actually telling this story.
And you are still writing on the fourth book, or is it already finished?
No, I'm writing the fourth book. I was actually writing these books through the 90s, and my first book, In the Hold, was awarded with this major literary prize called the Nin Prize, and it became an instant bestseller, and it was translated into numerous languages. There was a theater play that was also awarded. I just found myself completely unprepared in the middle of it. I never planned it, and plus there was no war going on, so I have to deal with these crazy, completely separate, you know, intense stuff in the same time, me becoming like this pretty well-established literary figure, and then on another hand living this shitty kind of life in a shitty kind of place where I found myself, and that my literary success actually has to do with the shittiness of the place. If the place wasn't shitty, I would never be a success. And that was something that was bugging me intensely in that time. And in March 1999, I was trying to write this third novel, and then the NATO bombing of Serbia and Montenegro has started. And I immediately stopped writing that, because to me, in 1999, under the NATO bombs and this whole horrific thing that Serbian state was accomplishing in the Kosovo region, to write about 91 and 92 already then felt outdated and ancient, and I just felt that they blew it completely, that the intensity of the events was so fast and furious that I just couldn't really even finish my fucking, you know, ambitious writing plan. And I abandoned it. I just thought, I don't even feel it anymore. I don't want to fake it. It's just stupid. I really wrote it from the gut. It was not an intellectual effort. It was something that really I needed the stomach for, because I felt it through my stomach rather than through my head. And then I decided to just wait until the times change. And we always had this really silly idea that as soon as we finish with these wars and whatever happens, but as soon as we stabilize, we will immediately progress and then become kind of like a Swedener.
What can the Europeans learn from Yugoslavia, maybe?
Well, we had there's a lot of comparisons being made, lots of them pretty responsible as well, between the EU and the state in which it is in, and then Yugoslavia of before, because you can kind of argue that Yugoslavia had a structure, well, ethnic, national, and then religious structure, which is very complex, which was very complex, and in that sense very similar to these dynamics of the EU. There is one thing that really set it apart, and this is the fact that Yugoslavia was very much ideologically driven. It was a socialist country. It was by far more open than any other socialist country, but it still had nothing to do with the democracy. And it was a loose federation, but still the outside borders were much stronger than the inner borders, and this is something that sets it apart from the EU. So I don't think that comparisons are easy comparisons are possible, but nevertheless it taught us something, that political ideas and their realizations in reality can overcome us and be bigger than the possibility of the people to run them, to carry them on their shoulders. And we really do feel that Yugoslavia, what was the core of the Yugoslav idea, was simply too big for us. We did not live up to the expectations, and we failed miserably. And it hurt a lot the way we failed. So I just hope that Europe is something else, and we always believed that there was another quality in Europe that was not present in Yugoslavia that should keep it alive and prosperous. We will see. At the moment, we are pretty lost in time and space. We don't quite know where we are heading as the continent and the idea behind the continent, but I hope that some solutions would be found.
Yeah, it's difficult to compare the historical situations. Yeah, maybe perhaps we can go back to the year 1991. I'm somehow interested in punk or alternative subcultures and the war, because I'm trying to do something about the Croatian punk or Yugoslavian punk singer Zlatan Panonski, who fought the war then on the Croatian side near Vinkovci and Vukovar in 1991. How did you perceive the relationship in the alternative subcultures and the war somehow at that time?
Yeah, as I said, the 1980s were a massive period for the youth culture in Yugoslavia, and punk and new wave really exploded in Yugoslavia, and there were scenes all over the place. I mean, the smallest town would have a number of bands playing, and there was a massive communication, intense communication going on between the major centers of urban Yugoslavia. So the bands from Belgrade would go to Zagreb and play, and the bands from Zagreb or Ljubljana would you know, travel also, and people would hang around, and there was a lot of friendships going on, and creative cooperation as well. Plus, there was a number of smaller cities which were culturally, subculturally intense, like Rijeka in Croatia, or Novi Sad in Serbia, or Vinkovci, when you mentioned Zlatan Panonski, or Osijek in Slavonia, that was also contributing with different music. And it was not only music either. I mean, it really affected the whole sensibility of a generation, and movies were changed, and the way that people thought about themselves have changed, and this whole revolution in the way that young people were simply seeing things have really run through Yugoslavia in the 1980s, and this is what made us so naive towards the actual reality. We just did not perceive it. We were in the bubble of the youth culture and enjoying it intensely, and lots of people would now remember 1980s with nostalgia. And they would sigh and say, oh, these were the great times. Whereas, no, these were not the great times at all. These were the times of the political collapse, implosion, which actually led to the wars. But underneath that, there was a lot of LP records and great singles and lots of gigs and everything that we like to remember. Plus, bands did not exactly come travel to Yugoslavia. I'm talking about foreign, I mean, the bands from Great Britain or the United States, because there was nothing to do here. So we had to compensate somehow. And I think this is what made the local scene even more important for the Yugoslav youth. We just needed these bands in order to be able to see them. So when the wars have started in the beginning of the 1990s, this whole scene, I think, was also completely unprepared for everything. There was some anti-war actions on behalf of the musicians in Belgrade, particularly. Rim Tutti Tuki was the project that was actually this anti-war attempt of the several punk and new wave musicians that tried to engage people to refuse to go to the war and fight. And there was a lot of also leftist, mostly anti-war sentiments among the Croatian bands like Kud Idioti in Pula, Let Three in Rijeka. Satan Panonski was a separate figure throughout. He was just too fucking eccentric for anything that was going in Yugoslavia in that time, and he was not even perceived almost as a human being. There was something unearthly and eerie about his personality. So he came up pretty late. It was already second half of the 1980s, and his brand of punk noise thing that he did had no basis in Yugoslav music. I think by that time, what felt like revolution in the beginning, late 1970s and early 1980s, already became a new mainstream in Yugoslav music. So there was a lot of this kind of na-na popish sort of new wave thing going on. And things were getting depressive, and in that sense, maybe Satan Panonski actually fits in the picture of the era. There was a lot of heroin in Yugoslavia, a lot of hard drugs, and drug use became intense throughout the 1980s. AIDS also appeared and became pretty big in certain circles, particularly in the big urban centers, and little by little, everything that felt really intelligent and sparkling and beautiful in, let's say, 79 or 1980 felt old and decadent and kind of ugly by the end of the 1980s. And there were these deaths. I mean, the Ekaterina Velika, which was one of the major bands from Belgrade, I mean, everybody died. All of them died. A drummer is still alive. Like, the whole band has been wiped out through the series of heroin overdoses, AIDS-related deaths, and other stuff. So to me, Satan Panonski belongs to this period where things felt normal on the surface. If you travel to what was then Yugoslavia in 1989, 1990, it was, I think, depressive, but kind of normal. I mean, you could walk the streets and, you know, nothing would happen. But the youth culture somehow already, without knowing it, reflected the change in the atmosphere in the society. And it was as if it was kind of like a sort of overture to the major events, these deaths and the change that happened among the within the youth circles would only 2 years later become the part of the everyday normalcy in Yugoslavia, and depression, drugs, wars, fear, violence. It all became a part of the daily life. But 2 years before, you could only see it in the domain of the youth culture. And in that sense, I think Satan Panonski, thinking about it from this perspective, completely, even though we did not recognize it then, actually reflected the reality of where we were heading.
Yeah, I interpreted your personalities in the novel U Pod Balubliu as somehow dealing with escapism or punk in the provincial landscapes, like Satan Panonski might have also something to do with the desire to escape, maybe the same in Belgrade, and it's also a universal topic. Do you see that in your novels, the desire to escape somehow?
Well, the 1980s, maybe young people from today have a hard time understanding certain dynamics of the world that have changed in the meantime, but now we do live in this decentralized global reality. It's not any more fair than it ever was, and the poor are still the poor, and the rich are still the rich, and the rich seem to always get richer, and the poor seem to get more and more numerous and poorer. But, you know, this poor child in India might not have an access to clean water and might get cholera and die at the age of 13, but it most likely has a smartphone and they can somehow perceive the world, and it would be the same smartphone and they would be using the same applications as the Queen of England. So the nowadays is such that we don't get Facebook for the rich folks and then another Facebook for bourgeois and then a third Facebook for the working class. It's just all the one and the same Facebook. And it makes the world to me an interesting place. Not a beautiful place, but the dynamics of the modern world are something that I appreciate. In the 1980s, we did culturally live in this extremely centralized world. I mean, if it didn't happen in London or New York when it comes to punk and new wave, it's basically as if it did not happen at all. And we all had this feeling of being so close or so far away from the centers. There was this intense feeling of where the center is. You could not go wrong about it. So escapism. I mean, if you lived in a shithole somewhere away from the center as a young person, your normal tendency would be to go move closer to the center because you wanted to enjoy yourself and you wanted to contribute. You had something to offer and you just wanted to be there where the things were heard. And this is the reason why in 1985 I moved to London. I had no economical or political reasons to do so. I was okay economically and I mean, I was not okay politically, but I was definitely not suffering. And so to me, this was not the reason why I wanted to leave Yugoslavia, was of this intense feeling of being provincial. And I wanted to go somewhere where the things are happening, actually. So this was something that lots of Yugoslav youths wanted to do as well. And this intensified when the reality in Yugoslavia became unbearable. This idea that this is not my world, I did not choose it, I was not even asked anything. This shit that was produced has nothing to do with me. I never wanted it. I did all the things that I did in my life were completely opposed to it, even before it even happened. But I was working against it because I was working for communication and I was working for the okay relationship between the people and I was working for the world where it doesn't really matter whether you belong to this ethnicity or that ethnicity or you kind of, you know, preach to this God or that God or whatever shitty, stupid thing that actually made these wars possible. So this escapism that you call it was actually the last in the line of understandings that this reality is not something that I participated in. And in that sense, I have no reason to take it on my shoulder, basically. So this is how the young people reacted then. And I understand that sometimes it might feel like escapism, but then in these situations, you really felt physically that there are two realities that you have to cope with. One is a general reality in which we somehow have to take part, and the other one is this intimate reality that is equally important.
Perhaps a desire to escape is something normal also in youth culture for all the times. And
well, I think in the way that I find it very hard, and at least some people, I think now identity politics are playing a big role everywhere and everything is getting fucked up again. But I really think that in the way that people refuse to take responsibility, I mean, we are growing up, we are soaking up global cultures. throughout our lives. And I mean, we have been listening to English music or any kind of music and reading French authors and, you know, eating Thai food and whatever, watching American movies and whatever. So what part of me is really Serbian or German or Finnish or anything at all? And this terror of geography, this terror of identities that just remained fixed and same, whereas we find it extremely hard nowadays to get to terms with them. So I just have to fight really hard to understand what's actually expected of me, if you see what I mean, because my feeling of identity does not conform to the identity as seen from the outside.
I mean, also the word escapism has something negative about it because, the desire to escape might be normal, but also it implies that you can't escape somehow. You want to escape, but you can't. And that's also at Upotpalubio, maybe that they would like to get somewhere else with their lives, but they are not able to because they are in that ship. That's maybe Yugoslavia or somehow.
Of course, you get stuck in this three-dimensional, you know, thing, the prison.
Yeah, maybe back to that war. Did it appear more often than in other punk that songs were dealing with the subject of war or with a certain heroism, like Laibach, that there were more present in the song lyrics?
No, I don't think so. I think my generation, the generation that actually belonged to that punk and new wave scene, and that was people born either in the late, very late 50s or throughout the first half of the 1960s mostly, was kind of fed up with this official narrative of socialist Yugoslavia that was formed through the heroism of the partisan fighters in the Second World War and the liberation of the country, which was led by the Communist Party, and then in the new Socialist Federative Republic of Yugoslavia was formed. And so maybe there were like ironical reactions to it, like you have mentioned Laibach. Laibach started as this really fierce provocation machine. The way that they put together the traces, the aesthetics of both communism and Nazism worked really intensely in this increasingly insecure Yugoslavia after the death of Tito in 1980. And this is when Laibach started really, really functioning. Yeah, this gets to do with this ironical, provocative approach to the country in which we lived, and then obviously it then referred to the world as well, and it was really communicative on a global level. Urbana Guerrilla was a teenage punk band that I was a part of. I played the guitar and made songs. We had a song, Ipak Bojim se Rata, like I'm still afraid of the war. It would be translated, and it was our first song and our massive hit. I think we were just really impressed with the Clash and the way that the Clash, as opposed to the Sex Pistols and some other punk bands that we appreciated in the time, had this kind of knowledge of world politics. And we just, as being 15, 14, 15-year-old, we were really impressed with that. I mean, we felt that they have actually read Marx. They're not just mentioning Marx. They read the fucking Capital, and we couldn't care less. I mean, we had Marxism as the school subject. So we're like completely opposed to it. So we, in a way, I don't want to sort of portray it in only a humorous way, but we tried to kind of, you know, make an impression in a way. And that was the era when Brigate Rosse were really active in Italy, the leftist working workers terrorist group, and they kidnapped Aldo Moro, who was the prime minister of Italy, and they murdered him later. And we just made this, and then the Bader-Meinhof were the big thing in Germany. So this whole terrorism was very impressive to us. And then we just wrote this song about how the world is fucked up, and we just couldn't care less, because the couldn't care less was also this punk attitude, I don't give a shit thing. So we just kind of put it together, and then this became our major hit. And then even nowadays, I mean, people refer to this song, which was always really funny to me.
Yeah, maybe that will turn us back to the contemporary times. Can we expect to see some more translations of your works into English or German in the closer future?
Yeah, I think translators, well, the publishers have lost a big part of the interest for my books in the meantime. And I have to say that I think it's kind of mutual. So I don't wonder, because I felt this terror of being a literary person that is not something that I really wanted to be. And be upfront with your whole personality in this very egocentrical sort of way, which I do not enjoy at all. And this for me was the hardest part of the whole palaver, was to just keep talking about myself, which is something that I'm doing right now as well. And the intensity of that, particularly being that we live in this now, I don't want to go into this whole Babylonian mode, but we live in this world separated by languages. So what we have just said for the Japanese audiences have no significance for the Norwegian audiences. So you have to keep repeating it, if you see what I mean. And it needs a lot of ego stamina in order to be able to carry it on your shoulders. I do not enjoy the presence of myself so much. And I already felt in the late 1990s, early 2000s, that I'm not really fit to be this kind of writer. And then I started to wonder whether I need to be a writer at all. Did I ever say to anybody that I was a writer? I just kept doing things. I really enjoy playing music. I really like writing. I really like doing other things. So to me, it's much more crucial to be not tied to this one identity of a writer, but to be able to do other stuff. And also, Crocodile Festival is the reflection of that, because I really enjoy doing things on a higher plane, rather than just to myself, for myself, and about myself. And this is about other people. It has nothing to do with me. And I really, really enjoy that. Then I also write scripts for the movies. I did some theater work because I enjoy cooperation. I enjoy working with other people. When I was in Mexico, I was again playing in a band, in a punk band. Well, then what it was like, this neo-punk band called Los Armstrings. And I just enjoyed doing music so much. It doesn't mean that I don't see myself as a writer, but not as a writer who goes into this arena of writers and then fights off other egos with his own, because this is not something that I find lots of enjoyment doing.
That sounds good to rely more on communities than on your own, perhaps.
Yeah, and doing things for others, and enjoying kind of working on a level where I don't even have to mention my name.
But do I already have a title for your next novel? I have to ask. Is it soon to be finished?
If you're talking about the fourth novel of the series of Clarka Maxima, yes, I'm working on it. It will probably be published next year, and then I'll finally close this trilogy. It's not as if I was working only on it. I published 11 books altogether, and I mean, some of the novels that I wrote in the meantime, I find to me much more satisfying than the Clarka Maxima series. But this is due to historical reasons, something that I got stuck with, and me being kind of responsible, I just have to finish. Plus, I decided that now, looking back to the 1990s, is really interesting. It's not a fun period for us here, but it's something that we still leave the traces of here. And it's not as if the wars from the 1990s have been over. And we also refer back to the time when, for instance, the Beatles are coming to Hamburg to play in what, like 1960, 1961? And it's been only like 15 years from the time when the British have bombing Hamburg badly, and you know, the everything, and you see this whole change of atmosphere. It's really in the 1960s. I mean, the Second World War has definitely been over, and there's a new reality coming. And here in the region of the what do you call it, the Western Balkans, the former Yugoslavia, now 20 something years after the wars have been led in the former Yugoslavia, there is still this very intense feeling of the presence of these experiences. They have not been left in the past. They have been, somebody have been dragging them all the way to this very day, and we still live in direct contact with the experience of the 1990s. So this is doubly so the reason why I should actually finish my tetralogy.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks a lot for the interview, Vladimir Arsenievich, and maybe sometime soon we will read more in German language again.
I hope so.